Well, they're heading it out. Let's talk about power. Power, good or bad? Can be good. Exactly, yes. And there's a couple types of power. Legitimate power, authority power, coercive power, and psychological power. You will see some coercion. So authority power would be, could be your title. Reward power is that they're going to give you something for doing it. Coercive power is that maybe you fear for your life. And then psychological power could be coming across as too bold, invading your space, turning the heat up, having a desk up on the stand, all forms of psychological power. So let's talk about these. Good? So coercive power could be manipulation, intimidation, threats, deceit, all short-term, all based on fear. Now, if someone's using this type of coercive power on you, do you really want to do business with them? Maybe you have to, but hopefully long-term you don't. It might be time to walk. So I don't want to spend a lot of time on how to use this power. There are books out there actually on this. Just want to be aware that it's out there. Manipulation, intimidation, and threats. Then there's psychological power. Time pressure. Then they know your plane is leaving. What happened in Vietnam during the Vietnam negotiations that blew it for our side? Yeah, Vietnamese rented their place for three to 5 years, something like that. What did we do? Yeah. Time pressure. It's an amazing thing. It could be on your side, it could be against you. Boldness. We talked about the bank examiner yesterday, the Eiffel Tower. Don't let that fool you. There was a lawyer, I met in Salt Lake that always wore a cape. I was trying to figure that out, if that was a power play or if that was just weirdness, but it came across as very bold and people just kind of bought into it. That was kind of weird. And here's interesting, is some people will surprise you, they'll distract you, they'll show up at weird times. On the subway, when people saw you coming down, can I have your seat? No. Can I have your seat? No. Can I have your seat? No. Only 20% would get up, 28% would get up and give you the seat. But when you surprise them, 56% would. Does that make sense? So sometimes when we don't have time to think about it, and we're surprised, we're distracted, we tend to do things we wouldn't normally do. Does that make sense? So sometimes we'll throw things out and we'll try to surprise you with psychological power. And then pity. Pity is a form of psychological power. Is it okay to use pity? Well, Jerry Lewis gets beat up for doing lots of things with pity. What does he do? He cries, but what does he do? Was it every Memorial Day? The telephone. And what does he parade on the stage? The kids. And it's a pity play, isn't it? Some people don't think that's good, but it raises a lot of money, so we can go back and forth on that. And then space invasion, proximity we have talked about. Pity and space. So let's talk the difference between face-to-face negotiation, pros and cons. So face-to-face, we can read their faces. There's always less deception face-to-face than in an email. Because if it's over an email and they don't know you, you're just an object, you're not a real person in their mind. And it gives you more control. Cons, it can get heated real fast. You can go from zero to angry very fast when you're face to face. It becomes more emotional and there's more head games. It tends to be more psychological power and manipulation. I prefer it face to face. You can read more, you can do more, but some people, there's pros and cons. So that's face-to-face. Next one. The phone. The phone tends to be less tension. There's more breathing room. There's not as many pressure tactics as we see when it's face-to-face. You start counting, there's not that many pressure tactics. Now, what's the challenge of the phone? Can't read their face. It's impersonal. The other side, are they concentrating more face-to-face or over the phone? Because when you're listening to a telecom, if you're on the phone, what else are you doing? Something else. You're doodling, you're checking your email, So you don't have their undivided attention, usually, and you don't know if you do. Harder to build rapport, and sometimes we can get a little more aggressive with the phone. It's easier to use profanity over the phone because you're not face-to-face than it is on the phone than it is face-to-face. So you can get aggressive that way. The name-calling thing. Next one, email. Well, the good thing about it is you can think about it, right? There's more time. You can look at your word choice a little more. Sometimes you're reading more into their words. How do you say it? You're not as much pressure to come up with an answer right now because you can respond to it. And the cons? Sometimes we tend to be a little more impulsive. We tend to say things in a mean way without being mean sometimes. We're less restrained and we tend to jab a little more. Exactly. It sounds good to you, but then they take offense by it. In fact, I was looking at a study. People became over the phone as far as being aggressive or abrupt happened 12 times over the phone on average and 102 times by email. So it increases because it's words. It's there. So there's pros and cons. You need to learn how to do all three. Some people prefer others. The irony doesn't email. Emotions sometimes don't email. You think you're being logical, but they think you're being emotional. Now, before we do this next negotiation, we're going to do another negotiation. Well, first of all, we need a break. Okay, we'll take, we talk about the pre-persuasion checklist. We'll take a quick break. Then we'll need groups of four to do this. One's really interesting to see the dynamics of four in a group. And then we're going to do Stump John. Any type of real estate question, at least with a lot of creative financing, how to apply these techniques. He's going to give you some great techniques you can use right now applying these techniques in real estate and in business. Really good. Have you guys, have somebody talked to him? Is he good? Yeah, so you want to listen to that. We'll do that last thing tonight. So this is your, any questions on the pre-persuasion checklist? You're welcome to photocopy it and use it. The property, concerns, their needs, credibility, obstacles you could face, background, it's all right there. So we don't need to go over it right now. Just to let you know that you have it. And before you go to negotiation, you want to answer as many of these questions as you can. All right. Questions? Good? Comments? Rude remarks? Okay. Do we need 5 minutes or just a quick break? Or what are we looking at? Okay. 5 minute break. Come back in groups of four. I don't care if you know these people or you've negotiated before, but groups of four. And we are going to negotiate, then John will be up, and then we'll call it a day. All right, bring it in. Woo! Now, a couple groups got it done real fast. What was your secret? Okay. So, the real goal, once you got past your wall, was to what? Lay all the cards on the table. Didn't help anybody to keep it back. They weren't going to get any extra. There was a definitely win-win in this situation. And what would be the key? Now, if you're getting to a position where they're not going to reveal it, do you think it would be good, nice to have a neutral arbitrator come in? Maybe a fifth person come in and say, oh, can you tell me what you need? Do you think people would be more confident in doing that? Tell me what you need. Tell me what you need. Tell me what you need. So what were some of your ahas during this exercise? Did you guys come to agreement? Okay. What did you learn? Now, four parties, it just complicates it once more, doesn't it? Go ahead. As long as everyone was honest and everyone was willing to do that and had a trust in the circle. If that didn't happen, it wouldn't work. But it is. This is the one where you have to put your cards on the table. I saw another hand. But just put your... Okay. Yeah. Everybody accuse you of a dirty deed? Yeah. Good point. Now, the key I want to point out here is the more parties you get into a negotiation, the more honest and forthright it's going to be if you're going to get it to work out. When you start getting four and five countries together and some holding back and some aren't being truthful, it's never going to work out. You start getting four, that's kind of the number where you kind of either have to have an arbitrator that's going to look at all four parties, where everyone's going to have to come to the table and trust each other and put your card on the table. You guys get it? Oh, good. Still friends? Oh, good. What else did you notice? Do we start doing seven parties? No, we're going to stop here. No seven parties. But you see what happens with the dynamics. The more bodies you get involved, the more honest you have to be, number one. And number two, we're careful of lawyers and real estate agents to remind you why. What is their challenge? They're trying to prove their worth. So sometimes you need to keep them out of the picture. See, time and time again, get them out of the picture. You go to the person, and they're more successful than the real estate agent or the lawyer just because the guard's down, they can develop the relationship, they usually have better skills. They've been through training. Any other comments on that? Okay, some quick housekeeping. Tomorrow's Aloha Saturday, so you can wear your cabana wear or Aloha shirts. We'll all be in Aloha shirts. We are going to be giving out, what's that? You can wear skirts too. Trust awards are tomorrow. We're going to give out the most trusted award. There's still a few spots left for interviews to find out your numbers. And then how many of you have seen The Secret this week? How many times, who's watched it the most? Okay, is that a pretty powerful film? Because we have a couple options. We'll probably go around 3 o'clock-ish tomorrow. And then we have two options. Those that need to jump planes, you can. Then we have two options. We're going to show The Secret, something that you need to see again. And then we also have another more difficult Harvard negotiation that a couple of you could do too. So you could choose. If you need to get a plane, that's great. If you can stick around. John's going to stick around asking questions tomorrow. Our staff's going to stick around. We can show The Secret. And then we have another even more more difficult negotiation with a two-party Harvard negotiation that you're welcome to do tomorrow too. So we're kind of doing different things in the afternoon. It's about an hour, a little over an hour. Really good. Yeah, it's something. Now you have to be careful with The Secret. It's good, but what's the challenge? Well, it's focus, but it's also too. It's a law of attraction. What you think about, you get. If you think about death, that's what you get. But if you sit on your couch thinking, I'm the best. People like me. I'm wealthy. Now that's good, but that also could be a form of delusion if you don't what? Have an action plan and have the tools to do it. And so it's a good start. It's a great movie, but there's some other things that you need to continue on after you watch the movie. So what we're going to do now is bring up John. He's going to talk about some of the techniques, how to apply them within real estate, things that are working right now, things to be careful of, make sure you take good notes, and ask your questions. And I think John's going to give a hug for everyone that stumps him. Is that true? All right, give a big hand for John coming up. Try to stump John. You want a mic?
Oh. Hello?
I'll tell you, I have a lot more energy if I don't have the mic. Here, figure this out. I hate these things. I think from you earlier, I won't be thinking now I'm being proved wrong. Can you turn it off? Go back there. Something tragic happened in the United States in September. I don't know if everybody remembers that day, but 9/11 happened. I lost $20 million in about 30 minutes. I ended up filing bankruptcy for my corporation, and I had some personal guarantees, so I ended up filing personal bankruptcy as well. So I've been around the block, so I'm telling you, life is not rosy all the time. Now, I can also tell you that you can't protect yourself from doing that, and I was protected, and I had the opportunity and the choice not to file the bankruptcy, and I didn't have to lose all my real estate and all my property at that time. Because I was protected properly, but when the courts asked me, do you own interest in any other entity or anything else, I admitted to it and I said, yes, I do, so there you go. And I gave it all up for you. So I want you to know that you still can survive with no credit and no money. Because since then I went out and did it again. And I had a bankruptcy, and I had no credit, and I had no money because they took it all. So when they say you can't do it, you can. So I'm here to tell you, so life is not always perfect, so don't think it's that way. So there we go. All right, let's start off. Does anybody have any specific questions that they needed answered right now or anything else? Yes. Which time? Okay. My strategy was exactly this. Does everybody know the term sandwich lease? Okay, sandwich lease. My strategy at the time was sandwich leases. Because I could get into property with no money down, virtually nothing, take over a contract, and put somebody back in and start cash flowing, and then I could start seasoning, and then I could get a loan, requalify, and pick it up. Sandwich leases was my strategy that I got back in with nothing. The trick to that was, it really doesn't matter what you know in real estate. A sandwich lease, the way you make money in a sandwich lease is purely negotiation. You've got to be able to talk to somebody and convince them to do it. Because a lot of times when you're doing a lease, they want a lease consideration or a large down payment or this or that. Did I have it at the time? I didn't. So what am I going to give them in return? In this scenario, what would you give in return? If you don't have any down payment and you want a piece of property, what would you do in return? How would you kind of negotiate that? Just a real quick scenario. Okay, close the property in 3 to 6 months. That's a tool. Anything else? Expertise or track record. In this case, it did help, but it's not necessary, but yes. Cash flow to the seller. Okay, cash flow to the seller. Yes. Collateral. I didn't have any at that time, but yes. Well, keep in mind, when you file personal bankruptcy, they don't let you keep a whole lot worth of anything. So I had a $50,000 Suburban. It had too much equity in it, so they don't let you have it anymore. So basically, what you end up with is a $400 station wagon. So, but I could use it for collateral. By the way, these guys were not nice. They were taking my wife's wedding ring because it had too much value, supposedly. And my bird. But did you know that a parrot is not considered a pet? It's an asset because a parrot is not like a domestic dog. And I had two big parrots. Anyway, just so you know, if you have any parrots and you have to go through this, they will want to take them. It's energy. What you can use energy, it's either good or bad. And if you're angry, you can defeat yourself and harm yourself and cause other problems, or you can use that same energy to do good. You just have to decide, I've got to go change where I am right now. I believe you are where you are because you choose to be there. Does that make sense? I honestly believe you are where you are because you choose to be there. The decisions you've made in the past have put you right where you are right now. Now, that doesn't mean that you can't change it. You may not want to live in a trailer. I lived with my mother, my wife and 5 kids in a 2-bedroom, 900-square-foot house after this happened. I left a 12,000-square-foot house to a 900-square-foot 2-bedroom with my mama. That wasn't happy. You can choose. So I didn't like to be there. The choices I made a choice to do what I did. I'm there. And at that point, now I have to make some new choices and continue to move forward and go on to the next. So it's just channeling your energy to do whatever you believe is what you need to do. So let's answer this young lady, Trisha's question here. Lease options. How do you do it then with no money or whatever? You have to negotiate. The simple fact is, I got in there, and I've done this so many times after this. I can do this memorized, and I'll do it very fast, but you'll get the idea. This is just the gist. I'll break it down. I call up. There's lots of houses in there, and I do not look in the lease section. I do not look in the for sale section. I look in the rental section. Okay? I'm looking in the rental section. I call up and say, I understand you have a house for rent, blah, 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 blah. Ask them all the questions. Now, Mr. Renter, I understand that you're looking for a tenant. You've been putting this on the market. You've got it listed, whatever. How would you like it if I can take it off your hands for the next 5 years? Okay, I'm giving him 5 years. I'm not giving him 1 year. I understand every 6 to 12 months, you're looking for a new tenant. It's costing you money for advertising. You're costing for repairs. It costs you for all this. I'm willing to take it off your hands for the next 5 years. Between now and then, I'll pay you the price you're asking for it. Okay, I'm going to pay the price they're asking for it. The first question, by the way, let me back up. The first question I asked is, have you ever thought about selling your house? And they say, yes, I don't care what the reason was. Two mortgages, rent, my wife moved to Texas, and I got to get rid of it, and I had to stay behind, whatever. It doesn't really matter. So I'll pay you the price you're asking for it between now and then. That gives me my option, right? As a matter of fact, Mr. Seller, I'm willing to take care of all the maintenance, all the issues, all the minor problems that come up with the property. I'll even go one step further. I'll pay the mortgage. I will automatically have the mortgage deducted. It'll pay your mortgage immediately. And the profit margin will be credited right to your checking account every month. Now, do you think somebody would want to do a deal like that? They're making money. It's a no-brainer. Here's what I just did. I protected my hiney by doing a couple of things. First of all, I told him, your mortgage will automatically be covered. I don't want him to pay the mortgage, because if I'm paying him the mortgage, I have a 5-year contract on it, he decides not to pay the mortgage, what happens? You lose the property, because he's getting foreclosed on. You don't have anything. If I'm paying the mortgage, I know it got paid. I'm making it like I'm doing him a favor. I'm doing me a favor. I'm going to pay your mortgage, and the profit margin will be credited automatically to your checking account. So I'm protecting me, not him, actually. I'm making it sound like it's a good deal, but it's verbal packaging. I'm persuading. I'm negotiating this guy to do this deal. So at which point they say, what? I'll do a deal like that, right? You get him to agree. Yeah, I'll do that. Now, Mr. Seller, I understand that you have had these things, and I'm sure out of that $800 or the $900 that you're asking for rent, some of that you're having to set aside every single month to make sure that you can cover the carpet to get changed in a year, or that you can pay for the advertising and so on. Being that I'm taking it, see, I've already got him committed, right? He's already exited. Being that I'm taking it for 5 years, would you be willing to lower that $900 or negotiate with me a little bit? Because I'm going to take care of all the maintenance as well. I'm taking all those headaches away from you. Most of the time, now they've committed to you, they've mentally sold the property, now he doesn't want to lose the deal. They're going to negotiate with you, they're going to say, yeah, I'll drop it to $700. Now if it rents for $800 and he drops it to $700, you just made $100 anyway, right? You made $100. On a lease option, does anybody know what the factoring rate is average nationwide on an option? Everybody understands what the factoring rate is? It's the percentage of the margin, the difference. So let's say a normal rent is $1,000 a month. The national average factoring rate is about 20%. So if you can rent a house for $1,000 a month, typically when you lease option it to someone, you can collect about $1,200 a month because that's the option consideration. They're giving you a little bit more because they're going to buy the house. Everybody understands that? So same scenario. Let's say I got the $1,000 house. I negotiate with him because I'm going to cover all the expenses. He drops the price down a little bit. So if he drops the price down $100, I made $100. Then I get a $200 at the other end, and if I do a two-year lease option at the contract, $48,000 for the $200 plus another $12,000 profit that I made in addition to that. Does that make sense? So $4,800. Basically, I'm making what, $7,000 in profit on a house I don't own, not counting the option consideration. That's how I did it. And if you can do that, why wouldn't you do 10 or 20? Good question. Yes. Okay, good question. Do I quit claim to the title? It depends on how we're negotiating the deal. Sometimes they won't put you on title. You do a lease option. So in every case, I'm going to file a notice of interest because I'm making payments on it, so I'm going to put a notice of interest of some type on the property because I don't want them to lose it anyway. But if I can get a quit claim, it's cleaner if you could just get a deed of trust. You go down and they record you on the deed. You just go through a regular title and get it all done. Typically when you do that, depending where you are in most areas, average is probably about $500 or $600 you can actually get from start to finish, and then you're right on title. And the reason you want to do that, quick claim deed or a deed of trust, is because if you're on title, you can actually show it season. And if you're in there 6 months, now you have a season loan, you can actually refi it and do other scenarios with it, or buy them out or whatever. So I try to do deed of trust, and I always try to go through title. Absolutely, that's like sandwich lease. I'm not living in it. Doesn't matter. Sometimes, once in a while, you'll get somebody who's pretty savvy, and they say, well, you can't sublease it. And I say, then I don't want it. And then they say, well, and then you start negotiating again. I almost never have a problem with that. I don't like it on there, and I take them off. Now, I put it on all my contracts. When I lease it out to somebody, I always tell them they can't sublease it. They can't do anything with it. It's my property. So I make it one-sided for me. The answer is yes or no. He's the bank. He said if you're putting him on title, if I'm lease optioning, he puts you on title, then did he sell you the house? The answer is kind of yes. He becomes the bank at that point. So it's kind of not even a lease option at that point. However, it's subject to. But it's the same thing. We start off with the lease option to get going to it. So you have at least the lease option. You can go to the subject to. You've got. So what happens is, these are not one technique. You get all these little techniques, and it's like, if I put this one with this one, now I have this. If I put this one with this one, I have, you know, Z or whatever. So you start combining deals together. I lease option to the renter. That's a sandwich lease. I lease option to somebody else. I like leases. I don't like renters. I lease option. Typically, I do 2%. I try to do 2%. I like big, expensive homes, especially in the California markets, have much more margin. And when you do those, I actually like the multi-million-dollar properties. I don't tend to do the $200,000. Although $200,000 properties are okay, I like the big ones. I don't mind a $4,000, $5,000, $10,000 mortgage in those scenarios, because I know I can get it on options. You got business guys coming in and out. Business people's credit is just as bad as the guy that works at the gas station. You understand that, right? The guy that makes $1 million probably has worse credit than the guy that makes $10 an hour. Because the reason he's got bad credit is he's a business owner. All business owners end up with bad credit somewhere in their life. It just happens. And they want to look good just like everybody else. So it's really easy to do a lease option on a $400,000 house. It's even easier to do a lease option on $1 million or $2 million house. Because the guy that can spend $4,000 a month is going to drop 5 or 6 or 10. They'll do it all day long because he can't qualify to buy, but he's willing to do it because he looks good to his neighbors. He has the option to buy it, and everybody thinks he's buying, and then you sell it to him and he's got a season loan. The other thing that's nice about those big properties is typically, especially in California, Oregon, a lot of the coastal areas, you can get great LTVs right now. You can buy $5-6 million houses for $2 or $3 million right now. They're easy to find. That gives you a few million dollar margin. Let's assume that the California right now takes a dump of 20%. If you've got a $5 million house and you're getting it three, you still got $1 million even after 20% loss, right? 20% is $1 million. You still got $1 million margin. Okay, what happens after 5 years? Good question. What happens after 5 years? There's three things that can happen on a lease option at the end of 5 years. And I'll do them kind of in reverse order, the way I like them. So the worst one is you buy it. At the end of 5 years, you got the option to buy it, so you buy it, right? The second one is you give it back. I'm done. Here you go, because your contract is up, correct? The third one, and this is my favorite, is you say to them, how would you like the last 5 years? Would you like to do it again? Right? How'd you like the last 5 years? I'd like to do it again. It's a no-brainer for them. He didn't do anything for 5 years and he made profit. So they're willing to do it typically. Well, I've got to raise the price on you. They always, I got to raise the price. Well, wait a minute, I've done this. And I'll negotiate and I'll go up in price. But I almost always get it right where it is, or real close to what I did 5 years ago. What happens is now I have 10 years of equity by the time I'm done with the end of the term. Does that make sense? Now keep in mind, on a lease option, when you do a sandwich lease, you're leasing optioning it to somebody else. There's always the possibility they buy it. Who cares? You're making profit margin. You're making money here, and you're selling it. You're okay with the income. You're okay with a certain dollar amount, and so you sell it to them. And remember, my term on my lease option, because I see some questions coming up, my term on the lease option is, I will buy it between now and then. So if they decide they're going to buy it in 1 year or 2 years or 3 years, I sell it in the middle of the term. I just cash the seller out. Did that answer a couple of questions that were starting to pop up here? Did that answer your question? Okay. Let's go here and then here. You can, and I put in there, I have the option to extend the lease or do some other things. And I always try and put them in there. But at the end of the lease, the simple fact is you're going to do something. You're going to renew the lease, you're going to buy it, you're going to sell it, one of those. But yes, you can say I would like it. The problem with doing that is a lot of people get really nervous about tying up their property for 10 years. So I say I have the option to extend the lease, and usually they don't even ask what the term is. They almost never ask what the term is. It's just assumed that you're going to extend it in the same period, but they can go back and renegotiate. Okay, the question is, how do you come to the sales price in 5 years from the person I'm buying from or person I'm selling to? There's two different prices. When I am leasing from the original owner, I'm convincing him to give it to me at today's value. When I'm leasing it out to somebody in the future, I am marketing at future value, pending an appraisal. If they want to move the house for 5 years, it's all negotiating. It's negotiation skills. They almost always give it to me at market value today. Keep in mind, here's how I argue market value. They say, Mark, let's assume a $100,000 house. Make easy math for me. So they're wanting to sell it for future value. What would you assume the future value on a $100,000 house would be in 5 years? What's that? Okay, 125. So you're wanting 125 for the house, and I'm coming into you, and I'm going to negotiate with you, and I'm saying, okay, yada yada, I'm going to take it 5 years off your hand, all the other stuff, you agree to do some of that, we're going to discount the fees and everything, and I'm going to say to you, here's what I'm willing to do. I'm willing to give you market value today for your property. You say, no, I'm not going to take 100. I want 125. I'll say, well, that's okay, because we could probably work something out, but here's why I'm willing to do 100,000 and why it's to your advantage to do that. First of all, there's no realtors involved. Basically, I'm going to save you 10%. So if you're selling it for 125 in 5 years from now, you're going to have a couple of things happen. First of all, there's about 10% of that 125, because you got 6% realtor fees and closing costs, right? Basically 10%. So 12.5 of that 125 is going to come right off the top immediately, and so you're going to net 112. And in 5 years, the way the law is now, you haven't lived in it 3 out of the last 5 years, so you're going to have a capital gains on the property, right? So right now, you're going to own approximately about $90,000 worth of house. True? This is a yes, this is a no. If you want to disagree with me, you can. I'm okay to that. So now I've just showed you how, if you sell it to me at 125 in 5 years, you're only going to get about 90 approximately. If you sell it to me right now on a contract, you can get 100-ish. Yeah, but I don't say that. I'm negotiating. Right? So if you say minus tax, let's talk about the taxes. All right, perfect example. I cash you out. You got, again, the capital gains, you got the taxes, whatever. Your tax, which part of the tax are you going to talk about? Capital gains. Okay? The capital gains right now, if I do a lease option contract, is she going to pay capital gains on that $100,000 right now? No. And if we spread it out over time and I'm making payments on it, and it's a loan, does she pay capital gains on the loan? Ordinary income, correct. And then when she collects the money, she then has to pay some taxes on it, right? So if we diversify some of it, if I spread this out for her over several years, she pays taxes at a discounted rate versus all cash at one time, correct? Yes? Okay. I'm just making sure, because I want... It can be. It can be. That's what I'm trying to point out. It just depends on how you structure the deal. So if you negotiate it this way, it's to her advantage to give it to me at market value right now than it is to take a 25% increase in 5 years. So it's all negotiation. This young lady back here first, and then I'll get to you. The question is, does it only work if the mortgage payment is... If the mortgage payment is less than what you're collecting for the rent, or the other way around, whichever one I said, the answer is, well, that's what you want. And if you put the numbers together and it doesn't work out, then don't do the deal. However, I can show you a couple of techniques when the mortgage is more than what the normal rent would be that you can actually still come out ahead. And there are some ways to do that, and there's some good legal ways to make it happen, some write-off stuff. I'll give you a real fast, quick scenario. When I do a $1,000 rent, I typically am, or lease, I'm typically, the lease contract is typically about $1,500 a month, and I do some very specific things in there. First of all, I want it to be high, because then I can show some seasoning and show some good income on it, and it works well for the financing. But more importantly, I want to be able to give some credits back, and it's not necessarily just giving cash back. I'm going to hire the person, anybody, I can hire their child if I wanted to mow the lawns, to shovel the sidewalk, to do some expenses on my property, correct? I'm going to hire somebody to do it anyway, landscape guy or whatever. I can hire them to do it for me, like a property manager. So I'm collecting rents and I'm paying them back $500 a month, if you will. So that becomes a tax write-off for me because I've got expenses. You see what I'm saying? So let's assume the mortgage then is $1,100 a month and my rents are $1,000 a month. I have enough in credits at the other end that it can offset that negative if I had to. I don't want to go there, but you can use that as a tool. Okay, let me answer this young lady's question over here. Well, that's why I'm making the phone calls. I'm making lots of phone calls. I'm presenting lots of offers, and most don't get accepted. I'll get one or two. They'll say, yeah, let's talk. And then I start to negotiate with them. That's all part of, you have to get on the telephone with them and convince them to get face-to-face. I like to be belly-to-belly, eyeball-to-eyeball when I talk to people. That's all relative, right? How old do you have to be to afford a $5 million house? Anybody can tell me? How old do you have to be to... 18. That's why I have to negotiate with you. I got to sit down there. I got to show you why you should trust me. So it's all in the conversation. So, yeah, Yeah, what if I'm 88 years old? Do I still qualify or don't qualify? Is a mortgage company going to give me a loan if I'm 88 years old? Some will. It might be difficult. You got to prove income. If I have assets or other things, I can prove income. But a mortgage company will still do it. But if do I need a mortgage if I'm doing a sandwich lease? No, I don't have to qualify anyway. You just make lots of calls, you negotiate. Do I look that old that they wouldn't qualify for a $5 million house? Let me ask you a question. Steve, stand up back there. Does Steve look old enough to qualify for a $5 million house? Yes or no? Would you guys give, well, you already know Steve. Would you, if you had a $5 million house, would you let Steve take your $5 million house from you? Absolutely. So I would do it. Let me tell you, right now, Steve and I are doing two of those right now. We're doing two. We got them under contract. In a week, we may be making a few $100,000 in the next day or two. But you can get my card, business card, you can call the office. So we've got two houses. One appraises at 5.1, and the other one's like 5 million. Anyway, they're both $5 million. We got them both under contract for $300,000. Guess how much money we're going to have out of pocket by the time we actually make about 700 grand on these? Nothing. We're selling the paper. I got a couple million dollars in equity. We've already got a couple of buyers that are interested. 3 million. Did I say 300? Sorry, 3 million. $5 million house for 3 million. I got too excited. There's about 300,000 that we're going to be making, approximately. Sorry. If I misquoted, you got to fix that on the mic. See, that's why I hate being recorded, because now he's going to legally hold me to that. Yes. Do on sell clause banks calling me? No. They legally can do it, but it almost never happens. And on a lease option, if I have, sometimes they have a do on sell if you are owner financing, but a lease option is a lease at that point. There's really not a do on sell. If it's owner financing, keep in mind, I got an escrow that's paying. It doesn't matter who pays it. They don't care. If they're getting paid, they're not going to whine about it. Okay. His question is, if you're in a hot market that's turning every 30 to 45 days and you can't get them at 65% LTV, what's the strategy? Two questions for you. First of all, what is the LTV that you're looking at? And the second question is, what is the range? In other words, below 250, 250 to 500, 500 to 750, 750 to a million. You've got 10% of $250,000 is the median price. They're turning in 30 days. So let me ask you a question. If you could buy a $250,000 house at 10%, that's $25,000, so $200,000 and a quarter. You can buy a $250,000 house at $200,000 and you can sell it in 30 days at $250,000. Why wouldn't you? Okay? I love this. All right. So you're saying you've got buying costs. And you've got selling costs in a market that's turning in 30 to 50 days. On a $250,000 house, we're assuming that's going to be 20 grand in and out. It leaves you $5,000 basically in equity. And then you got 30 days. So let's say worst case scenario, you made one payment. That's going to be $2,500. So you only made $2,500. Okay. Perfect. So what he's talking about is a net zero deal. Right? Net zero deal. I would do this deal all day long. And here's why. I would find a house that's worth $250,000. I'd put it under contract at 2.25. I'd try and get it a little bit less. But let's assume we only get it at 2.25, and it's selling in 30 days, and someone's going to make an offer at that at $250,000. I would go back out. I've got it under contract. I didn't close. I got it under contract. I'm going to get the backup offers. Somebody's making $250,000. I'm going to say to them, I will sell you this contract. $5,000, it's yours. I made $5,000 on a deal that went bad, right? In how many days? I never owned it. I'm going to pay taxes on what? $5,000, but as income. I don't have anything else. It was just income. And a market that's moving every 30 days, I would do that all day long. I'd have 10 or 15 of those under contract. You're making $5,000 a day. I'm assigning the contract. Realtors, I would talk to title companies. You got buyers. You got all kinds of people because the realtor is going to want to take the other half. You're not paying anything in commissions. It's being sold. The realtor is going to take half. You tell the realtor, I got a deal. I'm willing to do this. I got this at this price, and I'm willing to sell the paper. He's got 50 guys that want to take that deal down. Oh, I love those. Now, I typically have more buyers than I have houses to sell to. That's not a problem. I keep a list of everybody that's looking. I have an ad at the college, and I have college kids calling me when they get married. I'm willing to sell or finance, carry contract, 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-car garage, $500 a month. They call me up, and I don't have one right now. What are you looking for? Give me your information. Give me your parameters. Give me this. Give me that. I take a list of those guys, and if I have one, boom, we move them into it. If I don't, I say, you know what? Give me a little bit, and I'll find one, and I'll get back to you. If it takes me 3 months, I call them up. What's happened in 3 months? They're living somewhere else, right? They found another apartment. They moved into an apartment. So let's assume, Peter, you're the college student. You find an apartment. You move into the apartment. And I come to you, and I call you up, and I say, Peter, I found your house. It's like, oh, man, I moved to the apartment. I signed a 6-month contract. I still have 3 months left or 9 months left on it or whatever. What's that? Okay, you can buy out their lease. I'm going to say to Peter, oh, well, that's too bad. I just happened to found a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, no qualifying. I'm going to carry it, whatever, yada, yada. And you can get into it for $550 a month, and I know you're paying $500 now. I'll have to call somebody else. What are you going to say? Peter's going to say, hold on for a minute. I want that house. Let me see what I can do with my lease. Let me see if I can fix this end. I'll find somebody else. I'm going to take your property. I keep a whole list of those guys. You just call them up. So now, let's go to the extreme. Let's say you've got a piece of property that's opposite. You've got a market that's taking longer to move, and you've got to figure out how to move the property. I've got a perfect ad that sells property really well. It goes something like 3-bedroom, 2-bath, 2-car garage, whatever. Owner will carry back. Owner, you know, will do whatever, and comes with a free Corvette. Right? Who do they call first? They're going to call my ad or somebody else's ad? I'm giving a free Corvette. How much does a Corvette cost me? Okay, 20 grand. Anybody else? 5 grand. Financing the house. I didn't say it was brand new. I can get a 1978 Corvette at auction for $3,800, stick it in the garage. Right? They're getting a free Corvette. They don't care what year it is. It's a free car. I'm giving the title, it's a Corvette, that's cool. Right? And it'll even run. Okay, there's other things. What about this? You're in an area that typically has a lot of children in it. It's a family type area, and you're trying to move a house and they're not sitting in the market very long. Free nanny. A free minivan. What about college tuition? I'll give you some college tuition. I'll give you $5,000 in college tuition. The kid's 10 years old. I do a $5,000 bond for college tuition. In 15 years, it's worth $20,000 or $30,000 towards their college. I buy a bond from the college. I'm prepaying. I'll give Mr. Universe $5,000. He says, well, in 15 years, that will be worth $25,000 worth of tuition. I could do free tuition. I could do, you know, you could give away college tuition. It doesn't cost you hardly anything. It's all creative. It's negotiation. Put stuff together. Yes. Absolutely. Short sales. Short sales are actually getting more difficult to do now. The banks don't like to do short sales very much because they think they're getting hammered. If you understand how to negotiate with the bank, you can get them to do it all the time. Banking industry loses money when they're sitting on REOs. You understand that. They lose money. The problem is you've got to convince the REO officer that they're losing money. And if he understands that, he'll do a short sale. And sometimes they're very handsome. The guy you want to talk to, you interview REO officers. Everybody understands what REO means, right? Real estate owned. Interview REO officers all over the area you're looking to buy. The REO officer you want to work with is the guy that's being paid a commission or a bonus to save the company money. The one that's on salary doesn't really care. It's true. He's on salary. I don't care how much the company makes or loses. I'm getting my salary anyway. The one that gets bonused by the amount of money you save them or moving the property, that's the one you want to talk to. And those REO officers are the one you negotiate. And they always say, I deal with a broker. And I say, well, great, I like to deal with your broker. But you call up the bank, and there's ways to do this. You call up the bank, you have to tell her, who's your REO officer? Oh, that's Dave Meekum. Okay, great, thanks. You call back up and you say, hey, is Dave in? They say, which Dave? Oh, Dave Meekum, this is John. Sure, just a second. But put you over to Dave. Dave, I understand you have a property over here on Vine Street. Blah, blah, blah. I'm interested in doing it. He's like, well, I have a broker that handles that. Oh, yeah, I understand. But there are some questions that they couldn't answer, and I'd really like to talk to you because I'm serious about making an offer on this thing today. I'd like to take it off your hands. He's going to spend 15 minutes and talk to you. You don't just say, well, I'm looking for your REO officer. They're not going to put you through. You got to, you know, be convincing. Talk to them. Yes. Do I see challenges on doing cash-out refis without a seasoned loan? The answer is yes and no. Keep in mind, the laws change all the time. And who changes the laws if we're talking about a legal law? That's our state representatives, right, that change the law, whatever you call those guys, correct? They are not going to, they're not going to pass a law that's going to shoot them in the foot. They all own real estate. So what they do is they pass a law that says X on the surface, but really there's loopholes to get around it. Now, when they say you legally cannot take out cash out on a property, is that true? No, it's not a law that says you can't take cash out. What it is, the mortgage companies have rules saying we don't like you to do the cash out type thing. There are ways to do it, though. You may be not be able to take it out. However, if you own an entity, an LLC, that actually is going to come in and repair the property, can you hire them to come in and repair the property? Can you take cash out of a property? At that point, you're funding, you're borrowing money to pay for the repairs or the upkeep or the maintenance of the property, right? Well, they can check to see if you've done the repairs. To take cash out, it's legally your money. It's like, let me give you an example. Has anybody been in a car accident? Okay. Those of you who've been in a car accident, did the insurance company give you a check to repair your car? Okay, they repaired it. If you decided not to get it repaired, where would the check go? Because there's a dollar amount they're going to pay, right? If there's $10,000 in damage and you go to the body shop, they pay directly to the body shop. It's your option to get it fixed, correct? If you don't get it fixed, what happens? What's that? They give you the check. They give you the check. Now, there could be some complications, but that's kind of what happens. So you can choose to fix it or not. If you're pulling money out of your own property, you can pull it out. They're going to ask you, what are you doing with it? You can say, I'm doing repairs, I'm going to fix another property, I'm going to do maintenance, I'm doing whatever. You give them the reason, if that's what you're doing. Now, if you're going to put landscaping in, let's say it costs you $5,000 your landscaping, you're pulling $50,000 out, how much can you justify to put the lawn in? You know, there's a certain amount you can actually justify to do, and you want to do it legally. You don't want to say, I'm charging $50,000 when it only costs you $5,000 for lawn. However, your time is worth something. It's $5,000 for the lawn, but your time might be worth X dollars as well. So there are lots of ways to do it. You want to make sure you're doing it legally. But you can still pull it out. You don't even have to give them a reason. They want to know why. And does everybody know why they ask now? Why they ask what you're doing with the money? They legally have to ask this question. What are you doing with the money? If you're pulling cash out, the mortgage companies legally ask the question. There's a law now that stipulates that they have to ask you what you're doing with it. Exactly. It's part of the Patriot Act. The only reason they ask now, it's part of the Patriot Act, and they just have to have you write and sign your name saying that you're not funding some terrorist or bomb or something. They really don't care what you're doing with it. They ask what you're doing with it because you have now said you're not going to fund terrorist activities with it, and they legally have a piece of paper that says you're not doing it with your signature. That's why they do it. Yeah, who's going to admit to it anyway? Don't tell me if you are, so I don't want to know. What's that? It binds you. Yeah, because you're signing saying that I'm not funding terrorist activities. Okay, any other questions? We've got to wrap up because unfortunately we've got some union guys that want to kick our hindies out. Yes, ma'am. Albuquerque, New Mexico, you're a Lobo. Okay. She's saying in Albuquerque, the real estate agents will not take an offer or present an offer without at least $5,000 earnest money. Is that legal? No. In Albuquerque, she's saying the realtors will not take an offer or present an offer unless they have at least $5,000 earnest money. It is. It's not legal. And by the way, if they refuse you, you can report them to the commission. There's a licensing board, and they could get in trouble for that. Exactly. They legally cannot require a specific dollar amount. That's not up to them to choose. You decide how much you're going to give in earnest. It's up to the seller to decide if they're going to accept that earnest or not. Right.